Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, and this is episode 142, and we're going to consider the lilies. The lilies of the field. Yeah. 1963 movie starring Sidney Poitier, who won an Oscar for this, right?
Yes, and for... So he won it in 63, or I guess it would have been the 1964 Oscars. He was the only black man to win a Best Acting Award until 2001, when Denzel Washington won it for Training Day. And I was like, thinking of the contrast between the movies, I was like, is there any greater sign that they're like, we're desperate to give an award to Denzel and to a black man? I mean, I hate to say it like that, but it's, you know, Training Day, I just feel like... Not the same movie.
Yeah, it's not the same movie. I know I've seen Training Day, but I can barely remember it. I love Denzel Washington.
I'm not saying the man shouldn't get the award.
I know you're not. I know you're not, but...
Yeah. But you're thinking of the huge gap. And so what does that say about roles?
Yeah.
Although Sidney Poitier was also the only guy, the only black man nominated twice forever and ever.
Okay.
But the bit of trivia I like about this movie in terms of that is that he wanted, I think it was $250,000. And they just, this was on a shoestring. The director mortgaged his house for it. And they had to shoot it in 15 days. And they shot it on Linda Ronstadt's father's property.
Oh, cool.
The little farm that they shot it on.
In Tucson, Arizona, right?
Yeah, but in 14 days.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and so at night when everybody else was not doing anything, this is the thing that hadn't occurred to me. The crew for the movie was having to build the chapel so you could see the progress in the shooting the next day. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
talk about suffering.
Yeah.
But it was nominated for all these different awards or, you know, Oscars, and Poitier won, and he had agreed to waive at least part of his fee for a percentage of the movie.
Wow.
And but what it got him was the Academy Award. And so it changed film history for that reason, you know.
Well, good for him. That's cool. I didn't know any of that about this.
Yeah, well, I had when my husband and I first watched it, it was a few months ago, and I'd always heard of it, never seen it. And so we stopped and started looking up the trivia, and there's not tons because, you know, it's a small movie.
Yeah,
but
small cast.
But Jerry Goldsmith did the music.
I saw that on the credits, and
he
was like,
early
no way.
One.
Yeah, he must have been like 12.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, it was one of his first ones. And you can imagine this director just scraping everything together on a shoestring. It's one of those films.
And the music was very good, too. The Amen song, but... I noticed it before I knew it was Jerry Goldsmith. There was a point when they were walking, the nuns were walking, and it was, you could tell that they were playing that Amen song, but with an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, hey, that's really good.
Yeah, it was just a minor, it was the theme, but well, and so the song was actually written for the movie. I had thought that was a traditional spiritual sort of a song. And so I was so surprised when I saw it was written for the movie. And then poor Sidney Poitier, famously tone deaf, they say. And so the guy who wrote it also dubbed it. And what a voice.
Famously tone deaf, eh?
It's what they say.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there are other things that they tried to get him to sing or just everybody went, oh, we're having our Christmas party. Put Poitier at the back.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, that's neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what is this movie about?
Oh, I'll do that.
Yeah,
shall I?
Please.
It's a pretty simple movie on the surface of it. It's basically about an itinerant worker. Mm-hmm. Who lives in his car in his station wagon, and that's Sidney Poitier. And it's 1963. You're in the American Southwest. I don't think they ever say where it is, but it looks like Arizona, which is where it is.
There's cactuses.
Yes.
Saguaro cactus.
Scrub.
Yeah.
Desert. And it's desolate.
And those poor nuns wearing those black habits.
Oh, I thought of that. Oh. And so, so his car runs out of water. And so he drives up the nearest driveway from the highway, and it turns out to be this kind of a very ugly place, but it's got 5 or 6 German nuns in it.
Hmm.
And they only one of them can speak any English. That's Mother Maria, who's the Mother Superior. And it's funny, the minute she sees him, she starts latching onto him like, so, can you do handiwork? Could you fix our roof? You know?
Yeah, that was a good scene, too.
Yeah.
He just wanted some water for his car.
And he's like, well, I'll be nice to them.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to actually what it is that I forgot. He's out of money. He's only got like $4. And he's like, okay, I'll work. You pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have any money, but you don't know that.
And neither does he.
Yeah. And neither does he. And she has got a will like iron. And she's not one of these nice little sweet Mother Superiors who sing songs about, you know, the nuns.
Mm-hmm.
She is hard as nails, and for good reason, you find out. But so basically what happens is she manipulates him into helping with her dream, which is to build a chapel. And they have the very rudiments of a chapel nearby. And as he goes on, he discovers that nobody nearby has a chapel. Well, none of the Catholics anyway. They're having to walk to the nearest little grocery store and gas station, where the priest comes by in an RV, and he's got to go to 5 different places in his RV.
Mm-hmm.
And as that happens, you meet all the different people. There's not a huge cast, but they represent a lot of different types of people. And Mother Maria is determined she's going to build this, and God's going to help her, and she doesn't need to say thank you very much. And he is somehow ungrudgingly, through a series of scenes that I just thought were great, of, you know, piquing his pride, piquing him kind of being fond of the nuns and not wanting to betray them, like to the contractors, like, they say you're going to build a chapel. Well, who says I'm not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Into doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Those are great scenes that, you know, you think he's on his way, he's going to leave. He's convinced he's going to leave, and yet somehow he always stays.
Yeah.
That was good. It was really well done.
Right. And one of the main things is that they are both very strong personalities, this old German nun and this young man, although I guess he's not really young, but, you know, compared to her, he's a man in his prime. And in some ways, it's for 1963, it's, you know, there were still fighting about Jim Crow laws in the South, and he's sitting down to dinner with them. They're never questioning anything like that, because that's not what they're interested in.
Yeah, and race was not a big factor in the movie. It did come up, you know, as I was expecting it to come up, because 1960s movie.
Yeah.
But it did not play a large role in this movie at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a simple story, but so when you see people talking about it, they're either saying, yeah, so simple, or kind of like me, they were charmed by the basic truths it told and then by watching how this goal was achieved.
And I'm in your group there. So,
because you hadn't seen it.
I had never seen it. I never would have run across it. And it's another one of those that, you know, thank you very much, because
it's
just like, you know, add to the list. It was excellent.
So, yeah. But you'd heard of it, right?
I hadn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
I don't recall ever hearing about it, but maybe I did, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I just, somehow I thought it was one of those that's always kind of in the background, but maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah.
In which case, I'm glad to bring it to the foreground.
You bet. You bet.
Interestingly, our library, which is where I got it, has one copy, and it's almost always checked out. And when you check it out, you get a movie for a week, and they'll automatically renew it for like 99 times if nobody's asking for it. But I never get to keep it that long. Somebody always wants it.
Huh.
Wow. So yeah. It's popular.
That is. That's cool.
At least the library.
Yeah, and IMDb, it's got like a 7.7 out of 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very highly rated.
Yeah. So... And this was, you know, every so often we do a religious movie. So this was my pick. One was because we've been doing a lot of super big things and
yeah.
serious things. But the other was just because we talked about this movie for two or three days after we saw it. It got some really charming things in it. And you're exposed to Sidney Poitier's star personality, I think, or star quality. I mean, he takes things that, you know, another actor would just have falling flat, and he invests them with a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's one of those actors, he can be over the top for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like William Shatner.
Yeah,
you know, there was definitely a Shatner moment in this. You know, when he was at the bar, or at the, not a bar, at the shopkeeper, you know, there was some over the top stuff right there.
I want a double breakfast. Double OJ.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
And it's funny, you know, I just felt like, you know, it was very Shatner-esque, and the person he was talking to, the shopkeeper, was, Harry Mudd in the original Star Trek series.
Oh, my gosh. I knew he looked familiar.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, no way. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's really funny. Because
No, not Harry Mudd. I'm sorry. He was the guy in Trouble with Tribbles who brought the Tribbles originally.
Sells the Tribbles.
Yeah,
the Tribble salesman.
That's who he was.
Or
he
whatever.
Was not, yeah.
Or maybe
yeah,
he doesn't
Harry
sell
Mudd's
them.
A different
He's
guy.
Smuggling them.
Right.
Well, I knew we could get to Star Trek from any place we started, so congratulations,
Thank
Scott.
Thank you very much. We got that in there. Yeah.
No gorgeous green women.
Right,
just
right.
a lot of adorable German-speaking nuns.
Yeah.
But they were pretty dang adorable.
They were. It was fun. You know, when he first met them, he didn't know they were nuns.
Right.
You know,
well,
he called them their family and everything, you know,
I guess because they're wearing those weird hats. And
right,
things.
Right. Because remember when he walked in for dinner and
oh,
they were
right.
all wearing habits, he was like, oh,
oh,
these are
I guess so.
He
I guess, see, yeah, I
to
thought
do a
that
double
was
take.
Because they were all standing there praying and there was the crucifix over them.
Oh.
And he was like taken aback by the Catholicism part. So that's interesting. So two interpretations of that whole scene.
Yeah, I took it as he didn't know they were nuns. And when he walked in there, oh, these are nuns.
Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
And he was taking that in.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And then, his dinner was unacceptable or not nearly enough. Yeah.
No, and so first of all, they're all doing hard manual labor, but they're having to live off the land.
Yeah.
And so it's whatever they're farming, plus they have a cow. So everybody's got a tin of milk. And it also has some funny little moments, not big moments, but just little ones, like when he's ordering he gets to the gas station / you know, restaurant / general store, and they're having mass, and he's like, I'm Baptist. I want a huge breakfast. So he's describing the breakfast, and the guy says, do you want milk in your coffee? No, no milk. Because he's been drinking 10 cups of milk 3 times a day.
That's good stuff.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, so the story is very simple in terms of, you know, they've got to get the materials and they have no money. And the mother superior, Mother Maria, she is determined that God's going to do this. And although it's very clear that if God's doing it, which is really, you're left with the impression God did it. But, you know, there's never this moment of divine intervention.
Mm-hmm.
I think
unless it's the overheating of the car at the very beginning at exactly the right place. Yeah.
Well, and see, I would say one of the things I liked about it is all of those things, you could look at them as coincidence.
Yeah,
I mean, he goes away for 3 weeks and comes back and he never says why.
Mm-hmm.
You just get the feeling that he couldn't leave them, but he couldn't get it out of his mind. He had to come back and help them.
Right. Yeah.
Because I love, because he's got his sunglasses and his shirt with the palm trees on it and everything. So wherever he was, it was great, and he had some money. Or he was dressed up for his drive or whatever.
Yeah.
And so all the string of things that happen can be put down to force of personality and everything. And that's kind of part of the struggle between them, is Mother Maria only wants to give credit to God no matter who helps her. And he would like her just once to say thank you. And you're pretty much in sympathy with him the whole time, because he is stopping and giving up a good part of his time. And, you know, you don't know what other agenda he has. He just says, I'm moving on, moving through. I have my own plans. But he will stop and be guilted into it, or from some other twinge, because he is Baptist. And when he does the song from the movie that everybody would recognize, it's, you know, telling the story of Jesus in the Bible. So, you know, he feels those twinges of conscience and guilt also.
Yeah.
But they're, so you've got the battle of personalities and then his own struggles. Like when they're building the church, and they've got a donation of bricks, and he goes away for 3 weeks and comes back. And I think that's part of it too, is it a coincidence or not? Because after he's gone and comes back, everybody knows he's gone, and they're like, oh, now we're not going to get our church. He comes back, and suddenly all the farmers have made adobe bricks, or workers nearby, and it's largely Hispanic population. And so they've made all these adobe bricks or gotten them somewhere, and they're bringing them to donate. Suddenly they're part of the project too. It's not waiting for someone else to do it for them. So that engages the community.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wants to do it all by himself.
Yeah, and that was an interesting thing. It was almost, I never got the feeling, or I did get the feeling that there was this big backstory of him that we never really heard. He never opened up 100% to everybody. But, I mean, what was that inside him, wanting to do the church by himself and denying help? You know, it was almost like in my mind, I thought, you know, I wonder if this is like a penitential thing that he's doing to himself, some kind of something. But it was never really implied or anything like that.
Well, he does explain it when he's after everybody's kind of edged their way in, which was a funny scene of how they're like, he's going to kill himself doing it. We do want to help. The nuns are sitting there kind of working out, who do we invite to the opening? And he's sitting there kind of just talking, and they're not really paying any attention. He says, well, I wanted to do it myself. I always thought if I could have gone to school, I would have been an architect. And I wanted this to be something that, you know, I planned and I built. And, you know, and that's when the Mother Superior looks up and she's like, oh, listen to you. God's building a church and you're upset because you can't do it all by yourself. What a little thing to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, she's maddening, really.
She is maddening.
Because it's legitimate reason.
Yeah. I still felt like there was more there. But I think that's part of what's good about the story. You know, just like our different interpretation of that scene where he walked in there. It's like, you know, by keeping it simple and everything, there could be a lot more there. But anyway, that was my impression anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you make a great point, I think. That's one of the things that it leaves a lot of the story open, because at one point, you know, these nuns are just annoying and nobody knows why they're there in the middle of nowhere wanting to do this thing. And then at one point, I guess it's the storekeep who says, well, you know that they escaped. Yeah. They were in East Germany. Mm-hmm. They had to escape the communists to get here. And he says, no, I didn't know that. They didn't tell you, no. And so they never say a word about it, but your respect for them increases. They've been through really horrible stuff. They're not just coming in out of nowhere and saying, oh, we'd like to do this. This would be great. They've sacrificed in the past, and they're sacrificing now for everybody.
Yeah. And we don't ever get those details.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
You'll get little things, and it's like they're in wonderful contrast to the priest who is serving that diocese or whatever you call it. and he gets out of his RV, and he's got the sunglasses on as he does the mass because it's super bright. And but he definitely looks more sophisticated. And he says, he asks Homer Smith is Sidney Poitier's character's name, and he asks him into the RV, and he's, I prayed for a big cathedral and, you know, an important place to be, and this is what he gave me. And so he's dissatisfied. He's lighting up a cigarette, you know, which is allowed. And but his general attitude has bled over because the storekeep says, yeah, I'm Catholic, but this priest drinks. And Sidney Poitier goes, but he's a priest. And you don't know if he means all priests drink. This is, again, the uncertainty, which is how I took it. Or he shouldn't drink because he's a priest.
Right. And then wasn't the next line, and, but he's Irish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was a confusing line to me.
Yeah.
It was like, what is he saying exactly?
And that's what made me reinterpret it as instead of going, well, he's a priest, he drinks, into he shouldn't drink, he's a priest. Because when he goes, well, he's Irish, and goes, oh, of course the Irish drink.
Right.
goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And then when the church is built, when the chapel is built, I loved how moved the priest was. And what he said there, you know, he said, I need to be worthy of this. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, he said, oh, I prayed a prayer a long time ago, and now it's been answered. You've answered it.
Right.
And it was a beautiful little church that they built.
Sure. Yeah, and he wasn't an important place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All those people, it was important to them. Like it's funny how the guy who essentially, because the storekeep later, you know, he says, yeah, the priest drinks. But really later on, what you find out is he's essentially an atheist. Because somebody's saying, why are you helping with this? And he's like, oh, it's insurance.
Yep.
These people all, they want some place to build, you know, baptize their kids and get married and all this, and he says, and they believe it'll matter in the end. And he goes, I don't, but you know, it's insurance in case they're right.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I see no further. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know.
I don't know if you can hear that.
Yep.
I just chuckled. Oh, there we go.
Got an itch.
She is like, yep, thunder's over with.
Oh, right. No more. There were just a lot of really human moments that you could really relate to. Poor Homer Smith, you know, he gets a job a couple times a week at the local contractor, and that allows him to buy something besides the vegetables and the milk, because I don't know how they expect anybody to do all that hard physical work on the small amounts I saw on his plate.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And he's buying, and when he's buying, you know, here's a ham, and here's, you know, he's giving these, you know, here's huge cans of pork and beans and that kind of thing. And, but he also buys a string of lollipops for them.
Yeah.
And they're so delighted.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, yeah, because it's also about the little things in life, just the little fun things. And he injects a spirit of fun that is in not opposition to Mother Maria, but she just is very serious. She doesn't think that way.
Yeah, and the other nuns are hungry for that.
They are, because they're young, for one thing. But even the old ones, you can't live without some joy in your life.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that was moving too. That was neat. And his English lessons were fun.
I love those.
Those were good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Did you have favorite English lesson?
Oh, probably the first one when he just first started doing it. You know, I sit up or stand up, I sit down. It was just fun, and the joy of all of the nuns. Even the mother was getting into it. But that was cool.
Yeah, and it allows you to see a little bit of the nuns' personalities. Because you don't really, they're just kind of a group of people. You don't really ever see them. And also how he got to know them and love them.
Yeah.
You know, because he did, that's why later when he's talking to the contractor, they've been asking for extra materials. And he's been saying no. And the contractor comes out and talks to him and says, as I said before, they say, you're going to build a chapel. And he goes, well, why not?
I am building a chapel, right?
Yeah.
Who are you to say I can't do that?
Right. And there's two things at stake there, because at first he's sticking up for them because they're being made fun of by the contractor. And secondly, he realizes it's like you. And this is the guy who calls him, hey, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who was played by the director of the movie, uncredited.
Yeah, and that is a cool detail.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was cool. Well done, too. He's a good actor.
Mm-hmm. I thought so, too.
Yeah.
Because so he has cool. some spiritual journey in it.
Yeah, for sure.
For such a simple movie with so many very basic elements... You know, it's funny. It didn't feel like the kind of movie where they're hitting you over the head with a hammer, and it so easily could have been. I didn't feel like that at all.
You know, well, Mother Maria, you know, we're just believing that, you know, God's going to come through. And, mm-hmm. you know, on things like, all right, I'm leaving today. Okay, you're going to bring us to town, right? And then he's like, well, how are you going to get back? Because I'm not coming back. And she says, don't even worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then off they go, and it worked, and you know, because that scene happened that we just talked about, where his pride was hit, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm going to build that dang chapel. Let's get back. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to." Yeah, I thought it was great. You know, you'd think that would be just unbelievable, but the way it was done, like you said, there was no hammering over the head. It was completely believable in their characters.
Yeah, and if they remade that movie today, you feel like there'd be more lines of dialogue interjected so that they were sure that you understood where they're coming from,
yeah.
how they feel right now. Why don't you thank me?
Yeah, this was God.
Yeah. Well, and they did it enough. I mean, she just kind of lift her eyes to the heavens.
Yeah.
And fawn. Yeah. Didn't even stop and pray. And, that was actually the infuriating part, was she never thanked him, as I've said. And it was kind of interesting when she's like, I'll get the bricks. That's fine. Don't worry. I'll get the materials. And she then starts writing to, you know, the Kiwanis, the mm-hmm. Elks Club, the yeah. Lions Club, all these organizations asking for money to buy bricks. And nobody answers. Or if they all answer, they're saying no.
Right.
She's
right.
like, it's my fault. I depended on men and not God.
Yeah.
And that's when he gets so mad at her that he leaves.
Right. And it's sort of him that brings the bricks, right? I mean, not directly, but his return is what triggers the materials.
Right. The donations and the help
yeah. mm-hmm.
and everything and allowing it. And the thing I liked, too, was... He wanted to do it by himself, but it was so clear not only that it would have taken him forever, but it was a community.
Hmm.
This brought the community together, too.
Yeah, it did.
And that was what mattered also.
Yeah.
Because, because at the end, she's like, oh, well, now we got to build a school, and now we got to build a hospital. And, and the contractor's like, oh, I'm so sorry I brought this load of bricks over. You know?
That's funny. Yeah, and he's like, oh, she's going to be hitting me up forever for materials.
Mm-hmm.
And that really upset him.
Well, you know? Especially since he'd brought the bricks mm-hmm. as insurance.
Right, and he probably didn't get thanked.
Yeah. No, and he goes, he says, these are seconds. And at that point, the two people he's talking to have got horrible hangovers from a party. And... like, oh, I guess we could crush them up for gravel for the walk. He goes, but those are expensive. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
And so you realize they aren't seconds.
Yeah.
They're really probably good
bricks.
These
are nice bricks, yeah.
Yeah.
I like what he did with them.
Built the tower, church
yeah,
tower.
Exactly, yeah.
Bell tower.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned that she wanted to build a school and a hospital. I read somewhere... that they did a sequel of this. It's probably no good at all.
Yeah.
In which I think it was Billy Dee Williams.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Just because I looked up stuff about, yeah.
Right. Wanted to build they convinced him to build a school.
Yeah, Christmas Lilies of the
Yeah, that's what it
field
is.
Or Christmas something like Lilies that. Of the
Field.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't
Whoever did that, I'm sure, meant well. And, you know, and I guess, yeah, well, I shouldn't prejudge it, but.
Yeah, well, it's that it impulse like, for a sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you bet.
Oh, I also really liked the fact that, you know, kind of as we said, these days, you know, you also think they might have more of the conversation about the atheism or the lack of belief.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you see in this movie tends to be the contrast between his style of worship and theirs. And it's not ever critical, but like they know, you know, their German Catholic nun songs, and he knows more spiritual, you know, like a African American spiritual or just, you know, Baptist kind of a song.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, but they both equally know things, because one of my favorite moments in the movie is when he's trying to get paid for the work he's done at the beginning, and she has no money. And so he says, oh, okay, here's your big German Bible. You look this stuff up, and it turns out he's got a little pocket Bible.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, look up this. And so they start quoting chapter and verse to each other as it's this dueling Bible verse rationalization of, I need to be paid or I'm not going to pay you.
Right. Yeah, that was a cool moment.
Yeah. Because he could just quote it to her.
Yeah, yeah, when she pointed one out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, yeah, so he knew his Bible that well, and so did she.
Right.
Yeah.
That was neat. That was neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would say also that there is kind of a, well, I'm sure there are many, many examples throughout the country of, you know, this sort of a thing. You know, it's like a barn raising where you get together and you do your church and you make it beautiful. Mm-hmm. But watching this movie the second time made me think of the Painted Churches of Texas.
The Painted Churches of Texas. No, what
is
that?
They're in the Texas Hill Country. And this is something I learned when I moved to Texas. A lot of people don't know it, is that the Hill Country of Texas, which is, say, north of San Antonio, and I guess kind of, this is where my geography is terrible. We need my husband. But like west and south of Austin. Anyway, it's super hilly, so many trees. It's almost like going to the Ozarks or someplace like that. And there's a huge Germanic and Czech influence there, because there was 1845, Prince Karl of Braunfels got sent to Texas by some noblemen who met in a village along the Rhine River, and they were trying to find places for German immigrants to go because things were bad. And so it's called that area, and there's a town, New Braunfels. So the guy's, he was Prince Karl of Braunfels, so it's New Braunfels.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so basically a lot of people came and settled there. And they actually got along with the Comanches and everything okay. In fact, I'm just looking at something that says the Comanche chiefs did a treaty with them that allowed them to live in peace at Fredericksburg. So that tells you the kind of names that are all through there, Schulenburg, you know, Fredericksburg. And that's the only treaty they think that has never been broken between Native Indians and European colonists.
Wow.
Anyway, so that whole area, you really see the Germanic and like Czechoslovakian heritage and all this kind of thing. And they'll have Oktoberfest. And those are the places you go for sausage and beer. And it's wonderful. And one of the things around there are these painted churches, and many of them are in near Schulenburg. And I'll find a couple of pictures to put on the blog.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
But they have a lot of these churches on the outside, they look like your typical little country Gothic white clapboard church. And you go inside and they've done all this wonderful painting, and like the whole inside will be blue in varying shades that go up to a darker blue, and there's stars overhead, or what do they call it, they'll do faux marble columns and ceilings, they'll do what's the trick that I think trompe l'oeil, I don't know how exactly you say it, but all that kind of thing. A lot of times they'll have painted the woodwork to be a lot nicer than it is, so it looks like it's fine mahogany, and they're really just beautiful. And so thinking of that, which is, you know, these colonists were doing it and finding itinerant painters to do this for them, and thinking of this little church and how it affected that priest in the movie, it made me think again of what traditionally, until, you know, like the 70s and 80s, the Catholics have always tried to do, which is to make the church a fitting place for God, mm-hmm. since you've got the Eucharist there, and then also, which is God, and then also to lift our hearts and minds toward God as we go in.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, that cool. All that new architecture of we shouldn't, you know, either waste the time or, you know, we don't need this or whatever. And so you've got some ugly box to go into and the stained glass doesn't mean anything. It's a swirl of colors. And you're just like, I understand this desire to be humble, but you misunderstand what was going on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the most beautiful church in my area is the cathedral in Salt Lake City. Mm. It's the Cathedral of the Madeleine. And there is some painting in there that reminds me of what you're saying. Like in one portion, the ceiling is blue with stars. It's so beautiful that, people go in there just to sit. And I have read, you know, numerous accounts of people that are not Catholic who just like to just go in there.
Oh, really?
So it kind of feeds into what you're saying there. Mm-hmm. There's just a feeling there, a mood or a tone that you walk in there and it's like the city's gone and you're somewhere else, you know. And I've heard the same thing with, you know, what's the big one in New York City?
Oh, is that St. John the Divine?
I can't remember. I haven't been there, but I just recall an interview. I was listening to an interview of somebody. I have no idea who it was, long time ago. And they said, sometimes they just go in there and it's like, you know, you're going from the hustle bustle city and you walk in those doors and you're somewhere else and you can sit and meditate or whatever and then go back out.
Well, and part of it is, and I've read things about this without even worrying about what the church looks like. Part of this is you'll see things where people will go, there was some presence there. And, of course, the tabernacle's usually there.
For sure.
But the beauty definitely helps elevate. Oh, St. Patrick's.
Oh, that's it. St. Patrick's, yep.
Yeah.
yeah.
Although, the St. John the Divine, the Cathedral of St. John, that's in the Episcopal Diocese of New York also.
Gotcha.
So, anyway. Cool. But I'm looking at a picture right now of the inside of the Salt Lake City Cathedral, and it is very similar to the kind of thing I'm talking about.
Oh,
exactly.
Good. Mm-hmm. Nice. What it reminded me of when you were talking about that. So, and I don't know that it was painted that way. That church has been here a long time, but I think it was fairly recent in its history that it was repainted.
And
before that, I don't think that it had. I think it was just a plain type of a paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before, so, but you mentioned, I guess you call it Spartan or whatever, you know, and some of the churches, but it's not only churches. I was noticing the other day, I drove down to Salt Lake and I was driving through Salt Lake. And at some point I just realized, I said, you know how this is intensely ugly. You know, I was driving through on the interstate and it is just, I mean, it's nothing but concrete and walls and it was just, I was just struck by how ugly it was. And the city of Salt Lake City is very nice. Mm-hmm. You know, you get off the interstate and you're in, you know, a pretty nice place. But man, is that interstate ugly. And I think as a society, we've lost some of the aesthetic stuff that we used to do, you know, I don't know how it's like in Texas, but do they spend any money on artists, you know, beautifying some interstates and things? Do you guys have art around?
Well, actually, I have to say, and in most of it, it's intensely ugly. It's all concrete, and you think, I know the industrial age was good for a lot of stuff, but one of the things it did was get rid of a lot of the small things of beauty. that just make life better. But one thing I have to say, they redid a major freeway that's really close to us, Central Expressway, and they 75 for anybody who knows. And they along the side of the freeway where the retaining walls are and the bridges over the different sections of it, they kind of gave all of those their own personality. And they planted some plants that would not need watering and all that. So they kind of made it nicer. It's not just plain concrete. And when you get to this huge overpass, and they started doing this around these other overpasses as they're building them, it's almost like the bits of the church where the different supporting arches are painted in colors of green and yellow and, well, red's not the right color because these are all kind of muted a little bit, so they're more natural looking. And then there are these big stars of Texas set in the middle of them. Hmm. So when you're going under them, it's interesting to look at instead of just being this concrete maze over you. And they're rounded off instead of just being the square buttresses. So it's nice looking.
Huh, that's great.
And it makes it more interesting. And we were going under one that was being built near Grapevine, which is a town that's, well, you know, it's now just part of the huge suburb essentially, but it's about 45 minutes away. We're visiting friends, and there was someone there where they're rebuilding a lot of stuff, and they have got all kinds of impressions of grapes, you know, that are standing out from the concrete because for Grapevine. And, you know, with the trailing grapevines and the grapes, and we were wondering if they were going to paint those or just leave them more subtle as they were. But it's, you know, it's nice to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
They just make life better.
That's and good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's none of that here.
Well,
This interstate system has been under construction since before the Olympics came here.
Oh, my.
And it is just constantly – I have no idea why, but, yeah, it has just never stopped. But there's I don't know what would happen if somebody, you know, came up and said, you know, hey, we ought to spend some money on some art to put on these places, and you know, I'm sure it would just get shot down. That's my impression anyway.
Yeah, it just takes a push to do it. Mm. And well, and there are some things, and maybe it depends on the area's benefactors, because Fort Worth is the place where they really put Dallas to shame. And I'm always thinking, you know, the rich people of Dallas, they build things, but in Fort Worth, they take care of their people. And so you've got all these wonderful museums and art halls and everything. And when you go look at them, they're never just plain concrete boxes.
Cool.
You know, they've got wonderful like nouveau art or that kind of thing. And statues everywhere, parks all over. Kansas City's kind of like that, where I came from. More fountains than anywhere but Rome. In these big wide beltways. But here, what they've got in a few places are like downtown, there's a big spot where I don't know who donated them. I'd have to go read the plaque, but it's this huge, like whatever metal they would use, cattle stampede coming over a hill. Down looks like it's going to a main street. And if you walk up the hill, there's like the first pioneer graveyard up there. And there's some cowboys on horses. I mean, you know, statues.
Yeah.
And those are in two or three places. Irving has one nearby where you just come across them. And
that's cool.
There was a project a while back where people were buying these kind of sculptures just for regular areas. So when I walk into my local grocery store, there's one of a policeman who's writing a ticket. And he's about my height, but he's so realistic looking that I've seen little kids shy away like he's a real person.
Wow.
And he's just standing there outside the store where you walk in.
How about
so they
that?
Try to they did have a beautification phase where that kind of helped a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. But yeah, and like you said, Salt Lake City itself is very nice. Lots of really nice things to look at. Yeah, it's just the interstate system is not.
Well, but it does make me think of, and you know, it's easy to idealize the past. And I'm sure things go through phases, just like I'm saying. Nobody's buying statues and beautifying right now, but in Dallas. But I remember going to Rothenburg in Germany, and that's one of these. It's kind of like here you'd say it's like Colonial Williamsburg, but that's actually still a town where people actually live and work. But it's like a really old, perfectly preserved medieval town, so it's still got the wall around it and the castle. And when you walk around the top of the castle wall, you see people having their parties or eating dinner or whatever because they're still living in all the apartments that are near there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when you walk by, the window hinges and everything are things like you look at them and they're like little dragonflies.
Huh.
Or the door latches are lizards. Or, I mean, they've kept all these little decorative things and it makes life nicer.
Yeah. Agreed.
That's beauty.
I agree with you. Yeah. And in churches too. And I did, you know, the church that they built in Lilies of the Field,
mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't painted like you were, you know, describing, you know, in the
right.
painted churches. But yeah, it was nice.
That, well,
you know,
somebody had donated a candelabra.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point they're panning around the church and I'm looking going, were they able to get stained glass? How
yeah,
did that?
Yeah.
And then you see there's a sister who's painting an image on the inside of another window with
right.
kind of a translucent paint. So mm-hmm. they have something beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And meaningful. Because mm-hmm. I think it was Our Lady on Mary.
Right. Right.
Maybe Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah. I did see an image of Our Lady of Guadalupe in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was, well, and I think, where did I read this? Some local church donated, not donated, but lent their door. Because
oh.
it's a really fancy door.
Yeah, it was a fancy door. Mm-hmm.
And the impression is that, you know, the local people donated and worked on this stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Well, somewhere it was saying that there was a church that let them borrow things, especially since it was such a short time. But and in the trivia, I see it's a favorite movie of LeVar Burton, so I'm glad to see that.
A favorite movie of LeVar Burton. I like LeVar Burton, but that's cool.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like LeVar Burton? Everyone likes LeVar Burton.
That's right.
And one sad thing is that once, because it was on private property, they destroyed it after they were done filming.
The chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, yep. Although since everything was borrowed, like everything good
oh,
was borrowed.
Right, so they had to give it all back.
Yeah, they had to give all the good stuff back. And then, yeah.
So I guess no Lord of the Rings type of tour.
Yeah, you'd feel like there should be. It says the church doors were borrowed from the chapel in Sasabe, Arizona. I don't know how you say that.
No,
you might know.
No, I don't. I haven't heard of that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's just in the IMDb trivia. But
right. Somewhere close by, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So
they did take long walks in their black habits in the heat. I don't know when they filmed it, but it could have been the middle of winter. But still, that's going to be toasty.
Yeah, you did feel for them. You know, well, I guess it could have been the middle of the winter, but a lot of times they were showing Sidney Poitier taking off his shirt and he was sweating and just, I was like, I feel like that's real. I don't feel like anyone had to do that to him, you know.
Right.
As he's washing up or whatever.
Yeah.
Going, I should have built them a, you know, bathroom with hot water. So, oh, it's cold.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, neat. But yeah, great movie.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I did. And again, like I said at the beginning, you know, this is another movie that I never would have run across. So it's very grateful.
Well, I was just glad whatever inspired me to try it out and finally to get a copy from the library. I was so glad. It was, and watching it the second time, I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I might have to buy a copy of this thing. This might be something I want to pull out and watch. Yeah.
Another pool room movie.
For the pool room.
Yeah.
For the pool room.
That's great. Yep, love it. All right. So what's coming up next? A book, right?
Oh, a trip to England.
Yes. A trip to England.
Rumpole
of the Bailey by yes. John Mortimer. I love it.
Yes, it's a series of 6 short stories.
Okay.
About an English barrister.
Cool.
In relatively modern times.
Excellent. I have a copy in hand, ready to dive in.
Ah, good.
So, you bet. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, this is another one that it was not chosen to be a, a light contrast to the other things. I just happened to be rereading it and going, oh my gosh, this is so good. So I wanted us to talk about it. But,
oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. But it will definitely be the other light contrast.
I love it.
No race consciousness. spheres of heaven to travel through.
Yep. That's funny.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
from the desert planet to Tucson, Arizona, to England.
Right. More desert. Yeah, more exactly. Desert. Mm-hmm. So this movie got us grounded back in our own desert, and now we'll just go to a different country.
Right, right.
It's all planned,
people. It's all planned, right.
The tour.
With very nice interstates.
Yes. Yes.
That's great. All right.
Glad you liked it.
I did, and thank you again.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yes. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.